Hey, CICK News listeners. The CICK News team would like to thank you for supporting us in the past year. We couldn't thrive without your support, which is why we want to let you know about the upcoming CICK membership drive on June 18th. For $20, you can become a member of CICK Smithers Community Radio and receive a sweet gift for your donation. Become a member and directly support local journalism in your community. That's Friday, June 18th from 4 to 10 p.m. Follow CICK News and Smithers Community Radio on Facebook and Instagram for updates and links.
This is CICK News. Good day, and welcome to CICK News with your hosts, me, Dan Messick.
And me, Chris Carew.
CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. CICK Smithers Community Radio is on the dial at 93.9 FM, where you can listen online at smithersradio.com. And we are broadcasting from the unceded Gidimden Territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation.
Our top story today, I speak with Dr. Jong Kim. He's the Northern Health Chief Medical Health Officer. We talk vaccines, vaccination clinics, and the new approach of drop-in clinics, the uptake, and how safe he thinks we are as we approach the loosening of restrictions as soon as June 15th.
And stay tuned for After the News for part two of Forest for the Trees by our producer, Pam. CICK News podcast created to help understand the big and small picture of old growth forests of BC and especially the interior. On today's episode, we hear from people who work in the forest, but not the way you might expect. Chris?
All right, look forward to that. Before we get to Dr. Kim, let's look at the latest numbers when it comes to case rates. The case rates last week, June 1st to June 7th. We're looking pretty good across BC for the most part. Of course, Peace River North, a different story. And there is, it looks like, a little cluster in the Upper Skeena region. That's the Kispeox and Hazeltons. 10 cases last week. But in Smithers and in Terrace, in Kitimat, in Nisga, Haida Gwaii, the far north, 0 cases. And in Prince Rupert and Burns Lake, 2 apiece. So in total, 14 cases in all the Northwest in those 7 days. Not bad. Most, of course, in that Upper Skeena region. And when we're looking at vaccination coverage, we're switching to 12 plus now because everyone 12 and up can get it. Smithers and Burns Lake are still behind. They're actually just below 60%. And the Kitimat region is at 78%. Prince Rupert 75%, Haida Gwaii 76%, Terrace 67%, the Upper Skeena region 71%, and the far north, 2/3 of people have gotten at least one dose. And as of yesterday, our latest stats on COVID-19, there were 8 new cases in the Northern Health region, a total of 148 new cases of COVID-19 across BC. So they are going down across the province, which is great news. And in other great COVID-related news, nearly 75% of all adults and 72.5% of those 12 and older have received their first dose of COVID-19. And here in the Northwest, we are on our first or second doses. You can go to northernhealth.ca to check out when those are. And there are drop-ins. And in other news, this is in the Hazeltons region as well. New Hazelton RCMP had to deal with the other medical emergency that's going on in BC. They responded to 2 suspected overdose deaths in less than 24 hours last Saturday on June 5th. According to RCMP, one was reported to police just after midnight, while the other was received at 10 p.m. Police and emergency health services responded to the same residents for both of those calls. It's a reminder to keep your naloxone kit. You can get those at many places in the Northern Health area. And, of course, call 911 as soon as you believe anyone is overdosing. There is a law that protects people from drug charges when they are calling in an emergency. And those are your headlines. And I just want to bring up back on the point of vaccines. I got my second dose, so I am full up on the vaccines. In another 2 weeks, my antibodies will be tip-top. According to the nurse there, I will be 90 to 95% protected. Nothing is 100%, of course. But even if I were to fall into that 5%, I will, of course, almost certainly get less sick and experience next to no symptoms. The only symptom I will have now is a sore arm, if it was anything like the first dose. And I was also glad to see in the waiting area that you wait just in case you get a little woozy after your dose, that there is a wide variety of ages and a mix of the drop-in people and registered people. So it seems like that drop-in, I guess, idea that we'll speak with Dr. Kim about, that he thought was a good way to get people that just hadn't either gotten their first dose or maybe were just taking their time on it and just didn't have that convenience factor to it. It seems to be working as far as I can tell.
Yeah, it seems that way, Chris. And I think these pop-up clinics and clinics at maybe pharmacies might be in the future as well, just to get over that final hump. But it seems like those rates are going up, and it clearly is, at least something is ensuring that those numbers are staying down. 14 just in the northwest area is not bad, considering what it was like around this time last year.
Yeah, that's how much you get in one day in one town. Now it's the whole northwest in a whole week, and that is just great to see. So let's talk to Dr. Kim about, or hear from Dr. Kim about, why he thinks those rates are going down and just what happens when the things on, as soon as June 15th loosen up, people start traveling more, people can go indoors, go watch A Quiet Place 2 in the movie theater like the way they should. And just what his concerns are, what he sees the future being even after all the COVID restrictions are lifted. He's hoping people stick to the whole hygiene thing. I think I will definitely try. I haven't washed my hands so much since I was a little kid and my parents made me. It's a good habit. I don't know how most of us get away from that, but just the constant of washing of the hands. But more than that, more to the point, it's vaccines, what they're doing to get out there, things like getting into the schools to reach the younger people and their families, drop-in clinics, as I mentioned. Lots of stuff that we covered with Dr. Kim in this 15-minute interview. So Dr. John Kim, let's take it away with the Chief Medical Health Officer of Northern Health. I'm joined today by Dr. John Kim, Chief Medical Health Officer for Northern Health. Thank you for taking the time, Dr. Kim, in what I'm sure is a very busy schedule for you.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
All right, so let's get right into it. Vaccine clinics, they're ramping up again. We have people getting their first doses. I'm getting my second dose today, actually. And now kids 12 and up can also get vaccines. A few places here in the Northwest even have drop-in availability. So what made you and others at Northern Health decide a mix of scheduling and drop-ins was the way to go?
Yeah, thank you very much. In the Northern Health, we are going through, in a way, kind of stages of kind of immunization to maximize our efficiency and kind of planning. So we started our kind of immunization clinic with a kind of those kind of mass immunization clinic with a kind of fixed kind of large site with the kind of design to immunize the maximum number of people in a given time. And as many of our communities kind of went through those kind of mass immunization clinic and immunize a kind of significant part of the population in the community, now we are shifting into looking into not just efficiency of immunizing the most people in the shorter period of time. We're actually looking into how do we actually then reach people who are not immunized yet, and how can we support those people to get immunized. And one of the first thing we are looking into is the reducing the barriers for them to access immunization, either by locations or by time, or also kind of a process barrier with the registrations and so on, so try to simplify that. So we are looking in many of our communities, so drop-in kind of immunization, we simplify kind of registration process, some of the outreach kind of immunization kind of pop-up kind of clinics that people can go into, as well as after our immunization opportunities.
So it's all about making it easier. And I did notice that the high school in Burns Lake is set up to give students and their families vaccines. Why did you pick that school? And are there plans to do something similar at other schools?
We are in a conversation with the schools across the kind of northern BC. If there is a kind of interest and support from the kind of a school or the kind of community of kind of parents, we are organizing kind of pop-up clinic at the school, which can be quite helpful setting for students as well as the family together. And some of the school, like many of the school has gyms and so on, that's well kind of positioned to provide kind of those kind of mass clinic settings, especially in a community that has kind of whole of a community immunization before and do not have a clinic set up currently, the school provide quite good setting. So we are talking to them, several different schools and planning some of that clinics.
All right, we'll look forward to that. Now, speaking of Burns Lake and also Smithers, they are not exactly keeping up with everybody else when it comes to vaccination rates. And Smithers has had clinics going on, you know, on steady right now. They're 20% behind the vaccination rates of most of the rest of the Northwest. The Northeast, that's even worse. They're the worst in BC right now. As of last week, fewer than half of the adults getting the shot. Have you been able to learn anything? I know you're trying to make it easier for people, but have you been able to learn anything about why different places have such different enthusiasm for the vaccine?
Right now, we are the different communities started differently for the immunization. Just some of the communities as kind of early immunization that was open to everyone in the community. Some of the communities went through kind of different age groups, so there was a bit of more kind of stages and steps. And many communities in the north, like we faced a challenge with the staffing. So it took a time to kind of mobilize the staff and set up so we have a kind of full capacity for immunization for the communities. So we are seeing that different communities, some of the different kind of the level of immunization that reflects some of the differences in the immunization program. But the key part is that, as you mentioned, we want to catch up with the province, and we all of the communities in our province want to get to the 80%, which will take the extra kind of effort. So we are looking into some of the communities are still kind of appropriate for that mass immunization clinic. Like those clinics are filled in, and when those mass clinics are kind of busy, it's important that we get to a big part of the population as quickly as possible. But we are also seeing some of the community, those mass immunization clinics are slowing down. Those are the community we're particularly looking into improving the access. And Smithers is actually one of those communities that we, as you mentioned, that they're looking into kind of drop-in kind of clinics at the Smithers. And there has been a quite good uptake at drop-in clinics. So we are continuing to look into that, those kind of options for Smithers and improve that immunization.
Well, it's good to hear the drop-in clinics working. I guess besides making it easier, there's remote communities, there's vaccine hesitancy. What's being done about those? I know drop-in clinics makes it easier. Getting to those schools, places like Burns Lake, where they don't have a mass clinic right now. What about people in really remote areas or people that just aren't too sure or are waiting for some reason to get their vaccine? Because I did see on your social media that there's some marketing being done with, you know, personal reasons. People talking about why they got the vaccine, why they got their shot, maybe getting family doctors engaged. Are things like that also being done?
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, from some of those rural communities, one part is providing some of the after-hour weekend clinics. So when people in those communities visit the town, like they can also get kind of immunized. Another kind of part is that we're looking into some of the potential outreach kind of clinic in option, some of the kind of towns or kind of community in the rural area that we can kind of set up to provide immunization opportunity there. And we are having very active, for those people who are kind of cautious, in addition to having kind of barrier for immunization or has a concern or questions about the kind of vaccine or immunization, we are working kind of with our kind of communication team that providing good information in addition to what other like agencies like BC CDC or the Public Health Agency of Canada are kind of providing. And it is also for people who are cautious or concerned or question, it's really important that we support kind of their kind of questions and kind of gaining kind of trust on the kind of vaccine by providing opportunity for them to have a conversation, especially for those people they already have a relationship and trust with. For that, we are engaging with the kind of Division of Family Practice across the North to see how we can support our family physicians or primary care provider to engage that kind of conversation. And in each of our communities, we are looking into who are the kind of champions or the kind of leaders in our community, including kind of municipality leaders, and also, but we're also looking for who else also are the leaders of our community, and what kind of support we can provide, and what role they can play, and then in promoting as well as kind of providing the clarification, and engaging the conversation about the vaccine and immunization.
So it sounds like, yeah, you realize trust is very important, family doctors, leaders in the community, and that approach will hopefully work. And my next question would have to be younger people. I know I remember when I was younger, I felt invincible. Are they coming to these clinics?
We are seeing, especially in the school age children and so on, like when we have a kind of school kind of clinics, pop-up clinic that the school open to the family, there is a good uptake kind of there. We do see that the vaccine uptake is lower in the younger age group than the kind of older kind of age groups, but we are working to promote the kind of vaccine in those younger population as well as make it kind of convenient for them. And this is not a Northern Health work, but at the provincial level and at the federal level, there is a conversation that how do we, because that if you're immunized, like that you have a significant lower risk of transmitting COVID-19 ever to other people. So how do we have a policy that reflect that you are you pose lower risk to others? And those kind of policies might further encourage people, including younger people, or anyone that to get immunized.
Immunization, of course, isn't just about you, right? It's about other people, and I'm sure the teenagers really appreciate it being made easier. I know going right to the school probably helps. As a teenager, I remember I like the easy way to do things, so that's good. In a week, we may enter step two of the province's reopening plan. Are you comfortable with current vaccine rates being what they are, that people would be going back into places like movie theaters, and maybe more importantly, traveling, especially from places with low rates, going to other population centers?
Yeah, thank you. I think in the BC, including the Northern BC, we've seen significant reduction of COVID-19 kind of activities. And we've seen that in that step one of kind of restart, we've seen the increased immunization rate as well as a kind of sustained decrease in the COVID-19 kind of rate. So in some of the community haven't quite met that target immunization rate for the step two. But the overall, I think that we are, the Northern BC are quite stable to go into the step two, that can restart plan with our current COVID-19 situations and immunization rate.
Yeah, and we hate guessing what's going to happen, but there must be some sort of backup plan if we see outbreaks. I know Dr. Bonnie Henry kind of touched on it a little bit, but didn't go into detail, just about if there are pocket outbreaks, is there a plan? Because Northern Health covers such a huge area. Is there any sort of plan to deal with maybe something in the Northeast, especially I'm looking at, considering the vaccination rates and infection rates aren't completely out of control like they used to be, but they're still the highest in the province per capita. If there's an outbreak in, say, Fort St. John or something, is that kind of going to be treated separately than the rest of the province or the rest of the health authority?
Yeah, thank you. Patterns we've seen is that so we have a kind of cluster of COVID-19 in the family or kind of that social group or particular group within the community. If there's kind of unimmunized can cluster up unimmunized or can the mix of unimmunized or can immunize people that we see the kind of clusters. We've seen even with some, when there is a kind of substantial kind of immunization for which that the, all the northern communities have the substantial immunization kind of being done. So when there's substantial immunization, we see significant decrease in rapid spread in a across the community that we've seen in some of the communities during the second wave of COVID-19. So I think that having additional community measure would be a quite unusual step, and I think we will have to see if that will be needed. At this point, the plan is that continue, because we currently have enhanced kind of monitoring and case and contact follow-up system, kind of following through the second and third wave. So maintaining kind of that capacity to ensure that we detect any cluster early, and we have a kind of enhanced case and contact and follow-up measure to control the transmission.
All right, well, we'll see how it all works out. I do want to, I assume you got your shot as well, Dr. Kim?
Yep.
So I'm going to ask you, just like those people on your social media, Dr. Kim, why did you get your shot?
That's a good question. The one part is that the vaccine protect me. Like I'm in the Northeast, and the Northeast has one of the most active areas for third kind of wave of COVID-19. So actually, I've been anxious to waiting for my age group to be allowed to have that vaccinations. So it's to protect myself, I want to get kind of vaccinated. And the second part is that me being vaccinated means that the people around me, like it's a lot less likely to get COVID-19 ever from myself, or we kind of having the cluster among the social groups, so that everyone around me and the community overall kind of get protected. So that's another motivation for me to get vaccinated. And although there's no certainty or promise anything around the policy, but that hoping that if I get vaccinated, it might get eventually easier for me to travel around. So there's a bit of a motivation that getting some of that the fun part of the life back with the immunization.
That's right. Well, that was going to be my last question for you, Dr. Kim. I'll leave you on that. What are you most looking forward to when things start hopefully really opening up in July, and then hopefully most restrictions be lifted by September?
That's a good question. I'm really hoping that where we had a high number of people like being immunized, like either in the community or facilities, like we've seen not just decrease in COVID-19, but actually like that low rate of COVID-19 stay low. And that's why we really want everybody to get vaccinated. And and that means we can put this pandemic part, and that's whole package of things that came with the pandemic and emergency kind of measures with that COVID pandemic kind of behind us. So it's not a kind of just a single thing, that the whole bunch of that control measures, restrictions and change and adjustments in our life that we can put behind. Some of that we might continue, like, and some of that makes sense to continue, like a good self hygiene and so on. It makes sense to just continue on that. There likely be some COVID-19 kind of endemically just continuing in our community. So we will continue to take some precaution, but that emergency and extraordinary part of the COVID-19, I really look forward to put that behind us.
So is it travel? Is that the thing you wanted to do the most? Because I noticed
that. Travel would be nice. Yeah. Having I live in the Fort St. John, and We had a movie theater before, like seeing that we opening would be nice. Dining in, yeah, would be nice. Yeah, it'd be nice to have the dining in. We kind of got that back, but more of those back would be nice. Yeah.
Yeah, the full crowd, right? It's still a little sparse in there. It doesn't feel quite the same for sure. All right. Well, I look forward to all that too, Dr. Kim, and hopefully everybody follows your advice and gets vaccinated, as many people as possible, so we can do all those fun things.
Sounds great. Yeah.
All right. Thanks for joining me, Dr. Kim.
Thank you very much.
And there was Chris's interview with Dr. John Kim. Chris, I guess what kind of stood out for you the most? This is a year and a bit over since we first started this pandemic, and it doesn't seem to be ending just yet, just on the tail end. But where do you think we're at according to Dr. Kim?
Yeah, by the end of this, it'll be at least a year and a half. It was interesting at the end. I tried to lighten the mood and ask him, what are you most looking forward to? And right away, he jumped to what he thinks is sticking around. It was the extra hygiene. People may still feel comfortable wearing masks. I know other cultures in the world do this. When you're sick, you wear masks. But it's mostly hygiene that he sees sticking around, people just being more aware of germs. Of course, we don't want to make it to the extreme. We still want to have human contact and crowds and stuff. But so it's things like that, you know, that's sticking around. And travel-wise, he also wanted to travel, but he pointed out he's not too concerned, even though there are concerning numbers coming out of the Northeast where he is, when it comes to COVID rates. If there's still low vaccination rates and outbreaks, their plan is not to kind of do what they're doing now, which is a province-wide, not even a health authority-wide thing, where as we wind things down, if there's a little outbreak in a community, they hope that they don't have to touch anything when it comes to restrictions, and that, you know, they can just track who is around these people. And we're talking like later into the summer, as things really loosen up in July, they can just track the family members, the friends that were around them, where they went, and then hopefully just kind of contain it that way. But if push comes to shove, they're not going to go the province-wide route anymore. It doesn't sound like that anymore, because I know a lot of people in different regions that had really low rates, especially in the Northwest recently when compared to, the say, the Northeast or down in the South, Fraser Health region. We were saying, well, why can't we eat in a restaurant just because case rates are so high in Surrey? That doesn't seem to make sense. Or Fort St. John. Well, now they're, according to Dr. Kim, they will consider, but hopefully not have to use, community restrictions. So if there's an outbreak, for example, in Fort St. John, it would apply to Fort St. John. But they're definitely going to wait until they absolutely have to use that. But it's something to keep an eye on as we see certain pockets in BC that just aren't there when it comes to vaccination rates. Smithers still being one of them. But as I said, it looked really good when I went and got my second dose. People were waiting in line for a drop-in clinic, and there were plenty of registered people of all ages. I even heard a young fella talk to the lady in the waiting room who hands out the granola bars, that you know, he just got his first dose. It was just a matter of timing, convenience, and you know, he got his first dose. It was great to see. And I saw a guy that looked like he was a teenager. And then I saw, you know, some of our more senior members. So it was a wide variety. Great to see. And hopefully we won't have to use those community restrictions that Dr. Kim said that they're going to wait until the last minute to have to use.
Yeah, good to know, Chris. We've been talking about this for such a long time now. It's it kind of, you know, kind of get lost in some of the translation with this information. But that was some good optimism from Dr. Kim. But as you mentioned, just staying on this path, and we'll see what happens. Not out of the woods just yet, but good reporting.
And yeah, I really hope that those, I think it was a great idea to go right to the schools, because I was being kind of joking about it, but it's true. I think the teenagers and the younger people, they don't have much experience dealing with these systems. I mean, you know, calling in, registering, it's a hassle. They're the least vulnerable when it comes to this disease. You know, it's their grandparents, but they care. They want to get vaccinated, make life get back to normal. They want to do their stuff and keep their family members and friends protected, and community members. But if you're right at the high school, well, the kid's just got to go in, drop in and say, all right, give me my shot. And then he or she is just back at it, back in class or doing whatever. So the first one was in Burns Lake, but Dr. Kim did say they're going to start looking at doing it at pretty much all the high schools in the region. So look forward to that and hope for success.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Stay tuned for Pam's report, the second episode of Forest for the Trees, a CICK News podcast, created to help understand the big and small picture of old growth forests here in BC, especially up here in the interior. On today's episode, we hear from people who work in the forest, but not the way you may expect. Also, we're going to be taking a break from regular programming, and we're going to revamp a little bit of CICK News, and we will be back in a couple of weeks. So stay tuned. And next week, we will also take a look at more reports from Pam. And if you want to take a listen to any of our other shows, you can always go to smithersradio.com or, of course, subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. And we will be back in just a couple weeks. Do enjoy Pam. She has a few more episodes on the old growth forest issue, which is quite the big deal right now. So you'll have a few more of those in the next week or two, and then just a little bit of break from us. Enjoy your new lifted restrictions, hopefully, and we'll see you in a bit.
But so when my father passed away, both my brother and I had memories of a patch from our youth when we were young that we remembered our dad stopping at. And both of us had like separately been trying to remember where that patch was. And so one day we just happened to be driving along the highway together. And I was like, so I've been looking for this patch. And he said, I've been looking for that patch too. And we were both like, I have it narrowed down. And so we both had it narrowed down to the same area. So we decided, well, let's go in and see if that is in fact the space. And sure enough, as soon as we hit the tree line, we found some pines. And then we thought it would be really neat to see one of my dad's markers, which was just something he did. I won't share his secret, but in order to mark his plants so that it was easier to find the mushrooms. And so we ended up finding three of his markers in that little stretch. So we were pretty excited to find it.
If you listened to last week's show, you heard my interview with Michelle Connolly from Conservation North about the old growth forests of the interior of BC. To bring you up to speed, the fight to protect old growth forests has been going on for decades. Only these areas of forest used to be called primary or climax forests. The people advocating to protect these areas have been fighting to keep logging out of the forests and have been advocating for sustainable second growth logging industry plans to try and protect the centuries-old forests that exist in BC before they are eradicated completely. The NDP has been promising protection, but we question whether or not they're willing to say no to industry and start listening to organizations such as Conservation North and other ENGOs that are begging them to listen. As you may know, protesters were laying down to blockade paths of construction into the old growth area of Ferry Creek, and just yesterday, June 9th, the BC government claimed that it will defer old growth logging in Ferry Creek and Central Walbran Valley for 2 years, and Premier John Horgan has said that more deferrals are coming this summer. We will get into the politics of old growth protection in a later episode. But in today's episode, we're going to hear from two people. Kara Weber, who you heard from in the opening of this episode, and Ryan Zapsowski. These two people make a living in two very different ways in the Bulkley Valley. Ryan, or Zap, as he's called, is a manager of Windfirm, a tree planting company in BC, and has worked in the planting industry for nearly 30 years. Kara Weber is a mushroom picker. She hunts and picks mushrooms for a living, and was taught by her father Pete Weber, a known mushroom hunter in the valley. We're looking at more personal stories today to understand how to live getting your hands dirty.
Okay, yeah, hi there. My name is Ryan Zapsowski. Most people in the industry just call me Zap, and I am an operations and projects manager for Windfirm Resources, as well as I sit on the Strategic Advisory Council with BC Forest Safety. This is my 28th season doing this, and I have done multiple degrees in other fields like biology and natural resource management, but I've never left the tree planting world basically because of the culture of the world and the people I get to work with. They make it 100% worthwhile.
Yeah, I guess. Could you describe that culture for me? I'm new to BC, so tree planting is something that I hear talked about a lot, but I don't actually know much about it at all. So could you explain to me what tree planting was pre-pandemic?
Well, tree planting is, it keeps getting voted one of the toughest jobs in the world, but it's been kind of a collection place for really hardworking youth. You know, they range from 18 to, you know, into their 30s. There's lots of old timer planters as well, but it's a culture of freedom. People get to be in a bush camp together, 50 to 60 people. They make fantastic money. They earn every dime of it. and it supports so many different ventures in their lives. Like most planters either fall into their student paying for their education, or they're doing it to pay for their travels or to be ski bums, for lack of a better word, in the winter. So yeah, it's a short season, 2 to 3 months for the interior. There are people who plant year round because the coast goes, Vancouver Island and the North Coast, they go pretty much year round, outside of the interior. And it's, there's planting from, Ontario has a huge culture of tree planters. And then, BC is renowned for having much more challenging, steeper, rockier, slashier ground, but it's a higher price atmosphere. So a lot of planters migrate west for the great British Columbia experience.
And what was your, why did you get started in it?
Mine was a total random whim. A friend of mine said, hey, I'm going tree planting. And I had no idea what that was, but I had no plans for that first year of, after my first year of university. So I just said, can I come along? And I've never left. Yeah, I did fall in love with the people and the work, and it's really rewarding to do a job that the harder you work, the more you earn. So a planter normally wakes up for a 6 o'clock breakfast in bush camps. I'm not, I haven't done many hotel jobs. There are companies that only work out of hotels, but in a bush camp, you'll wake up at 6 a.m. for breakfast. That usually lasts about an hour. You jump in your crew truck with your crew. And now during COVID, everyone has to stay in their work pods, which is usually one truckload of people. So 6 people. And you drive out to the block, which is usually less than an hour drive. You work for 10 hours. Jump back in the truck, come right back to camp for a nice hot cooked meal. We have all the facilities out in the bush. There's hot showers. Because of COVID, we now have laundry out there, and I think unanimously across the industry, having laundry in camps has been extremely well received, and I don't think it'll ever go away now. So they can do their clothes, they get fed, there's, yeah, showers, all the facilities they could possibly want for a remote setting.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking more this year and I guess last year when COVID hit, because it would have hit basically just a few months before. I'm assuming you're starting to look for people, but am I correct in thinking this, that tree planting starts late April, early May?
Yeah, for most companies it starts in April and the beginning of May. And yeah, last year was a scramble because other than the few coastal jobs that were already happening through March and April, the rest of us, like the majority of trees, which we did plant 300 million trees in BC last year.
Wow.
And we had only a month and a half to plan for this pandemic and all the orders from the Northern Health and from the BC Health authorities. So in that time, the magic that happened was that all companies got together and collaborated. We worked hard together. We set up a program. We have some great outreach people through the WFCA, which is Western Forestry Consultant Association, and Dr. Jordan Tesluk is our spokesperson. We basically met almost every day. We'd spend hours and hours on Zoom to figure out how we can actually make our season happen, because it was in question for a while in 2020. Mm-hmm. And through those efforts, the health authorities actually adopted our suggestions for their camp guidelines and how we can move forward. And so it was a raging success story, because we ended up getting 5,000 planters out there planting 300 million trees without a single case of COVID in 2020.
So, wow. That's incredible. So I'm sorry, yeah. Is that just for Windfirm, or was that?
No, that's the whole company. Windfirm's a fairly small company in the big scheme of things, but we only work locally in Smithers and Houston. We plant about 13 million trees a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we only have 170 employees. So yeah, the whole industry though, 300 million is quite an accomplishment, and there's that many trees again this year. So we've had to face all the same challenges, except we are more prepared for the physical preparations, like knowing that we had to hire extra support staff, knowing that we had to have the protective equipment in camp, the sneeze guards, all that stuff was in place. The challenge this year was that there was actually a lot of COVID in the world. So COVID played a huge influence in our intake. Many companies chose to use rapid antigen testing as screening tools. We track our planters, our workforces, for 2 weeks prior to the season to make sure they're, you know, track their contact, track their travels, so that we have a good grasp of them being isolated and quarantined. And then once they get in camp, our camps turn into, hopefully, if everything's successful, mini New Zealand's, where we're 100% COVID-free. We're still tracking it. We're still doing rapid antigen testing. And we've had the support also of the government with some PCR testing for the positives that thankfully have been false positives so far. And then all of us companies, we've had to ensure that we have medical oversight and stuff. And so there's been some really great innovations out there. Locally, we have access to a company called Total Physio and Total Medical. They provided us with all the support we need to keep our planters out of the communities and not a burden on the local hospitals or medical clinics. And that's been adopted throughout the province. A lot of companies use Total Physio, Total Medical, and another company named Iridia. But yeah, we've had to rely on a lot of support.
And what does what have vaccination numbers looked like for the camp? And was that a prerequisite this year? Can you ask for that? Tell me about vaccinations.
No, we've made it clear that we would never, ever ask or force anyone to get vaccinated. And our workforce is typically in the 18 to 30-year-olds. So very few of them qualified for vaccinations pre-season. Mm-hmm. We do have First Nation members. And so First Nation members are, you know, they got vaccinated. And certain communities, as you would know here in the north, certain communities just did a blanket vaccination program in the last few months. So we did have, I'd say, a good 10 to 15% of our workforce had access before. And then Northern Health has been working super close with us. And we got one of our camps vaccinated just last week, actually. We brought them into the clinic, did a drive-through vaccination program. It was great.
In regards to the 2020 survey that came out last, or that came out in regards to sexual assault and misconduct within camps, what changes have you noticed firsthand since that survey came out?
I actually think that survey and the whole drive in our industry has been a raging success story, following suit with the Me Too movement, which is just creating a better world for everybody. So we established communication and a working arrangement with the Northern Society Domestic Peace about 5 years ago. It's very easy for us because they're a local organization and it's been a mutual working program. So they've been coming out to our camps for 5 years and giving speeches, and it's been super successful. The uptake from the industry, everyone feeling safe, everyone talking about the fact that we can have camps that everyone is safe in and that there's multiple outlets for communication if there's issues. So they were brought out to the rest of the industry, and a lot of companies have adopted NSDP. So they, in fact, got funding to make planter-specific videos for training on bullying and harassment and sexual violence in the workforce. And there's been a spin-off group on social media. It started as Women in Silviculture. Now it's, I think, called Rad Planters or something like that. And it's, I think it's fantastic. I think everyone now has a voice. Everyone has the right to be safe. And it's been a successful program for sure.
My name is Kara Weber.
Okay, great. And Kara, how would you say that you best utilize, how do you spend most of your time in the forest here in Northern BC?
Okay, so I know that you were talking about foraging, but for me, I don't actually eat mushrooms, but I do pick mushrooms for fun, but also for financial gain.
Oh, really? You don't like them because you don't like the taste or the texture? Tell me why you don't like them.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the... It's the texture for me. I can't do the texture. So I'm a huge fan of mushrooms. I think they're really cool organisms. I love to take pictures of them. But my foraging is mostly for pine mushrooms, which has been like a family thing. My dad was a pine mushroom buyer for 25 years. He actually told me a story about how he started the whole pine mushroom buying in the Northwest, but I don't know whether or not that's accurate or not. But so I've been picking mushrooms since I was a toddler with him. And then as an adult, he kind of showed me kind of a better, showed me the ways of the pines and taught me how to find them. And so it became kind of a passion. And then after he passed away, it became just kind of a way for me to still be close with him and in the forest.
Oh, that's so nice.
What
are the kind of things, what does it take to find mushrooms? I mean, I hear, you know, people who kind of do it like lazily.
I think, yeah, you definitely need to know kind of what kind of substrates and forests you want to find, like, whatever mushrooms you're kind of hoping to find, you're going to want to know where they kind of grow. So like what kind of environment they grow in, what kind of forest they grow in. So like pine mushrooms, they only grow in like pine forests with hemlock, and it has to be old growth. And there's like a very specific moisture content of the soil where they'll grow. So it's that kind of stuff. But if you're just lazily kind of, hey, I'm just going to go for a stroll and see what I can see, then that's always fun too. And you kind of learn what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah, definitely. And so would you say that that's your favorite thing to do in the forest, or kind of what, and what drew you? I mean, I guess, as you mentioned, spending time with your dad and definitely having like a shared experience where you're learning something from your dad, that was probably really, you know, really impactful. But what is it about the forest that you like spending so much time there?
I think for me, it's just like a peaceful, calm place. I really love, like, in the Northwest, just the thick moss on the ground. And for me, it's just like a super peaceful, like, calm place where, you know, most of the time I don't have cell service. So I'm not looking at my phone, and I'm just kind of enjoying the natural surrounding and just like taking it all in. And like, I'm obsessed with lichens and mushrooms and kind of anything else that's cool to look at. So I take a million pictures when I'm in the forest.
Oh, that's great. Kara, I wonder if you could, and you'll sort of be describing yourself in this, but also, you know, the kind of foragers that you must have come across, and especially that you probably met through your dad as well. But what's the typical forager and mushroom hunter? Who are they? What are character traits that they seem to have?
Yeah, it's funny because like I worked with my dad in his depot, and my brother, who ended up taking it over after my dad stopped. But there was always a lot of interesting characters that would come and go. But it's definitely a lot of local indigenous people are keen on the pine mushroom because it is a way to make money more so than other mushrooms. Now there's buyers that buy all kinds of mushrooms that grow here, but like for years it was only pine mushrooms that you could really make money on. So there's that. And then there's just like the local, I feel like a lot of younger people now are like, oh, we should be foraging. So, I like mushrooms. Where can I forage? So I actually get messages all the time from people like, can you take me out? Can you show me how to find these? So I feel like, yeah, there's the older generation that's been doing it for quite a while and like know their stuff. And then there's this new younger generation that are just like discovering this whole new world of foraging and that, you know, local foods and all that kind of stuff. So definitely like two different groups of people. I wouldn't recommend just, hey, I'm going to find mushrooms. I'm just going to go stroll in the forest. And like, you know, to a degree, I think that's okay. But like, I wouldn't be going too far into the forest without knowing what you're doing. That's for sure. It is a magical place, but it's also a place where you can get lost and then it's not so great.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Forest for the Trees, a CICK News podcast. Stay tuned next week when you'll hear from Sabil Huesler, about the past of protecting forests in the interior and northern BC. If you like this podcast and ones like it, make sure to like us and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And also, feel free to leave a review for any of these podcasts or our CICK News daily shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.